This is All In. I'm Miriam So. We're a little ways away from the end of summer, but there's still plenty for Hoosiers to see before the season is over. Today, we'll highlight some arts events across the state, and we will start with Indiana's Southwestern Tip. We're joined now by Anne McKim, Executive Director at the Arts Council of Southwestern Indiana in Evansville. Thank you so much for joining us, Anne. Let's start with the Front Porch Fest that's happening in about a month. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for having me on so that we can spotlight all the cool things that happen down here in the southern part of Indiana. Front Porch Fest is actually in its fifth year, although we took a break last year because of COVID. And it is this really wonderful festival where in Evansville's historic district and art district downtown areas, local residents open up their homes, or rather their front porches, to musicians, and then the public is invited to walk through the neighborhood and hear live music every few houses. It is all free and open to the public, and the event has grown just exponentially over the past few years, and now we see thousands of people coming through the neighborhood. And the really great thing about this project is that it's all really began as a grassroots thing. The Haney's Corner Arts District Association, which is a group that programs arts events in Haney's Corner, has now sort of taken the lead on the project, and they make sure there are food trucks and bathrooms and all kinds of family fun entertainment as people get to explore sort of a part of the city that not everyone gets to see all of the time. So that's a really cool project. And that, like you say, is coming up on September 4th.
Well, when you're talking about this Front Porch Fest, you mentioned people are coming through the neighborhood and they're going to see different things or music. Are these folks who are playing on their own porches, or do you just have musicians dispersed?
Well, some of that. Yeah, so it's a little bit of everything. I mean, I think it is the most fun. You will have porches where there are professional musicians who that's their full-time job. They're at gigs all the time, and they're playing on someone's porch. And then you walk a few houses down, and you might see a group of neighborhood dads playing music together on another porch. I think that we have about 50 porches programmed this year, and there is a map that will be available so folks know how to catch all of their favorite acts. It is definitely a family-friendly event, so it's strollers and wheelchair-friendly. And then at the end of the Front Porch Fest section of the night, there is a 21 and over after party in the Haney's Corner area that will have a beer garden and things like that as well.
Oh, so that's when the party gets started in the evenings.
Yeah. Well, I like to participate in both. And I'll tell you, for those folks who want to make the trek down to Evansville for this really fun event, there's lots of Airbnbs, lots of hotels in the area. My family has hosted bands in the past. And the very first year we did it, my daughter said to me the next day, "Mama, that was the best party we've ever had," talking about just how the neighborhood was so alive. And, you know, when you talk about the arts in this sort of pandemic world, the arts are uniquely suited to bring people together and to build community. And I know that's what we all need right now. And so this outdoor event is a safe way for people to feel connected and feel inspired and experience music safely, but without losing that the joy of being a part of something.
Well, when you mentioned enjoying it safely, obviously we're still in the midst of a pandemic. Is there anything you had to change to this festival for this festival this year?
Well, I'm going to say something that probably is true for all of your guests today, and that is everything is constantly evolving. What I say today, it might have to be tweaked in a week or two. And so that's why I sort of encourage your listeners to use social media or websites to make sure they stay on top of what protocol is. as it stands, we'll, of course, unvaccinated folks, we encourage to wear masks just to keep everyone around you safe. But we certainly don't have requirements for that type of thing right now.
Mm-hmm. And can you remind me, if you already said this, how long has this festival been going on?
So 5 years, but this is only the fourth actual event because last year was canceled because of COVID.
And what is your favorite part about this event? Is there anything specific that you really enjoy about it?
Well, I mean, it's a showcase of the diversity of talent that we have in Evansville and in the surrounding region. You know, we really pull in musicians from maybe a five-ish county area. But the diversity of musical genre, like I said earlier, just the different types of people who are performing, it's a wonderful, wonderful way to celebrate music. And the other great thing about the neighborhood, and your listeners who are in Evansville or who've traveled to Evansville will know this, is that this is a part of the city that has just stunning historic homes, really interesting architecture. And then, of course, the Arts District has, we've got some sculptures, we've got restaurants and bars that participate in the fun. So it's just a really good outdoor day of celebrating community and listening to music. And of course it's free, and plenty to eat, plenty to drink, and just a lot of fun.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be really fun, especially, you know, with folks trying to come out after being missing out on it last year, I guess. Some other stuff that you're working on, the Bauer Sir Heinrich Foundation Gallery. Can you tell us about what that is?
Yeah, absolutely. An excellent job of pronouncing the gallery's name. I know we've got some funny German names down here in the southern part of the state. So the Bauer Sir Heinrich Foundation Gallery is where the Arts Council of Southwestern Indiana, my organization, holds most of our events and programs. And so in this space, we have rotating fine art exhibits that change out every few weeks. The upcoming exhibits, hanging from August 10th through 27th, we have something called Artistry Unhoused, which is an exhibition of work created by individuals who have in the past or are currently experiencing homelessness. And that's a project that we're doing in partnership with Aurora, which is a local agency that works to address some of those social issues that come along with houseless, homeless experience. Following Artistry Unhoused, we have a really fun project. It's a miniature exhibition where all work submitted is restricted to 4 inches by 4 inches for two-dimensional work, or 4 inches by 4 inches by 4 inches for three-dimensional work. And that exhibit, the reception will occur on September 25th. In addition to the fine arts work that we have in the gallery, we do a series called On the Roof, which are concerts that take place on the roof of the Arts Council. It's a very creatively named project. And so we have just tons of music up there. And coming up, we have on August 13th, a hip hop show with Nero Angelo. On August 21st, we have a performance with Emily Bernhardt and Angel Rhodes. August 28th, we have the Hyper. September 11th, we have a concert with Brick Briscoe. And on September 25th, we have Big Ninja and Freddie Bourne. So a whole series of free public music, again, outdoors and on the roof of the gallery on Main Street in downtown Evansville. And these concerts are also all ages, which is really great because there aren't that many music venues that aren't bars. So being able to take your children to hear, local musicians performing and be outside in a safe environment. And we do always have a cash bar at those events as well. So those are fun evenings.
It sounds like Evansville has a lot of artsy stuff going on. Is there a misconception that there isn't much going on out there?
I absolutely believe that. I think that when people, when you look around and see what's going on, like if you actually look for the activities, there's a ton and really great organizations putting them on. I was just listing things that we have occurring in our space, but on the 7th, there's a jazz and art event going on at the Evansville African American Museum. On September 25th, the Evansville Philharmonic is opening up their season, and the Children's Museum in Evansville has several big events that are coming up in September, celebrating their 15th birthday party with lots of activities, and all of that sort of starts on September 15th. So I think anyone who says that there's not a lot of arts and cultural programming going on in Evansville perhaps hasn't made time to look around and get involved and see really there's just so much to do, so much to participate in.
Do you think it's gotten better during this pandemic time to coordinate and come up with stuff? I know for a lot of people it was a time for pause and reflection and seeing what needed to be done. Do you feel like you got a lot more done?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I do think so. I think that, I have the privilege as being the executive director of an arts council, I get to look at the overall cultural and artistic landscape in our community and then make investments or offer support in various ways. And so when I think about what I saw during, the real depths of the pandemic, and I say that optimistically that we're moving out of it soon, but the organizations that we work with invested so much time and effort into transitioning to virtual programming to make sure that they were still able to reach their audiences and serve the public. I think we all are grateful for that. There was such a need for creativity and expression during the lockdown, giving people an outlet and something to connect with other people through. I think that transition to virtual programming, it was successful in the ways I just described, but it also allowed organizations to connect with new audiences and connect with one another and do exactly what you say, coordinate better, reach more, and utilize resources in the most strategic ways.
Well, thank you so much, Anne McKim, Executive Director at the Arts Council of Southwestern Indiana in Evansville. We'll be back after a quick break to talk about the latest exhibits at Newfields and an upcoming arts festival in Fort Wayne. I'm Miriam So, back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Today we're talking about art events and exhibits happening across the state this summer. Now we're going to talk about a new digital exhibition at Newfields highlighting the work of Vincent van Gogh. To talk more about it, we're joined by Jonathan Berger, Deputy Director of Marketing and External Affairs at Newfields in Indianapolis. Welcome, Jonathan. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. I want to talk about this exhibit about Vincent van Gogh that recently opened. What has the reaction been like so far?
Thank you for having me today. And it's been overwhelming. Everyone that has come in has said such amazing things about this fully immersive experience. It's just a different way to view art.
And when you're talking about fully immersive, can you sort of set the scene for our audience to feel like they're there right now? What would it be like?
Well, that's really hard to do because it really is an amazing experience. So we have 150 high definition projectors that this really took over our fourth floor at the Indianapolis Museum of Art at Newfield. So we've taken this space, and it's very cavernous now, and converted it into this digital experience where when you first walk in, you'll be greeted by, Van Gogh's art, larger than life, and it's sometimes life-size when you look at these the scenery that he painted, landscapes, and you will have a sense of swelling music, a great musical score. These images are moving, and you'll also have a bit of fragrance in the air that is kind of an earthy fragrance with maybe some floral in it to make you feel like you're right there in the painting. A lot of times I feel like I'm standing in a Van Gogh painting as it's being painted around me.
That's really cool. I like the aspect of having the smells put in there. It reminds me of a ride I rode in Disney where like they spray this orange smell as you're going over orange trees and you feel like you're there. Well, can you tell us, like, you know, how did this concept come up for this exhibition? Is this something that's touring all over the country or is it just here in Indianapolis?
Well, there are other versions that that feature Van Gogh all over the nation, but we decided a few years back to partner with a group called Grande Experiences out of Australia, and they had several smaller touring experience in 65 cities internationally. And when talking with them, they wanted to launch something called the Loom. And the Loom is that fully immersive experience that we have a cafe, retail, all within that fourth floor. And so, you know, the best way that I can describe that, we all remember when IMAX movie theaters first came out, and the IMAX movie took it to another level. And that's what the Loom does for these kind of experiences, where it's so much more over the top than just a room with a projector. The images actually move. Like when you look at some of Van Gogh's paintings and there is a windmill in the background, it's slowly moving. You will see birds flutter through and clouds and sometimes rain and snow that happen all in all in that experience. And of course you can't miss Starry Night, which really leaves a lot of our guests at the end clapping and cheering when it comes on and it's over.
Is this the future of art where we're just going to be part of the exhibit?
You know, that's a great question. I think that we're all different consumers these days. We consume things differently. And I think that this is a way that we can consume art differently. Sometimes, art museums are those places that, maybe people are a little leery of going to because they don't understand a lot about art. But this is a way that we can invite people to consume or engage with art in a different way. And the best part about our fourth floor in the Loom is as you go through these galleries and you'll come into our cafe and you'll have these French-inspired foods and cocktails that you can take anywhere in the experience. The final gallery features three of our works of art from our permanent collection, which are a Van Gogh, a Paul Cézanne, and a Paul Gauguin painting. And so I've watched people that have gone through this entire experience, and then when they get to the end, they have such a better understanding of Vincent Van Gogh and the brushstrokes, compared to his contemporaries that he used. So in a way, yeah, I do think this is the future. I don't think that digital art is going away. And within that experience, that the Van Gogh piece is about 40 minutes. We also have four what we call featurettes. And these are four up-and-coming artists that have done, their digital art inspired by Van Gogh, which are completely different. One is ballet-based. One is more digital art. And so it's really an interesting way to, like I said, consume art.
Well, if you're listening and you have a question or a comment, you can reach out to us on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. We're speaking with Jonathan Berger, Deputy Director of Marketing and External Affairs at Newfields in Indianapolis, about the recent Vincent Van Gogh exhibit that opened up. What was the decision to focus on Vincent Van Gogh? What was that? On purpose, or is that just by chance?
No, it was very, very much on purpose. I think that if you ask, I went to art school, so I have a little skin in the game. But if you ask somebody that's really not familiar with art, to name some famous artists, Van Gogh, Da Vinci, Monet, those are the names that everyone says. Maybe Warhol. And so, featuring Van Gogh, was very on purpose. It's a way to introduce people to art in a very consumable way.
And this exhibit is going to last for how long?
This will last for a full year. The Loom is a permanent experience and the largest in our 138 year history that we have. So after this year, we'll investigate and explore, a new artist.
And it'll be the same thing for this Loom. So every time you have a new artist, it'll be very interactive and experiential.
Correct. Yeah.
That's really cool. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us. And if you can let our listeners know how they can find this exhibit or get to it.
I think the easiest way to get to that would be on our website at discovernewfields.org.
Thank you so much. Jonathan Berger is Deputy Director of Marketing and External Affairs at Newfields in Indianapolis. Now we're going to make our way over to Fort Wayne. We're joined by Rachel Ranking, Director of Communications at Arts United. And we're going to talk a little bit about the Taste of the Arts Festival. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you for having me today.
So let's talk about this Taste of the Arts Festival. It's been around for a while in Fort Wayne. How long has it been around for folks who may just be hearing about it for the first time?
Sure. So this is going to be our 13th annual festival.
Wow. Okay. 13 years. And did you have it last year?
We actually did. We pivoted and made it a virtual event last year, and we were very lucky to do so. We were able to coordinate with ArcPoint Productions, which is a local production firm, to bring all of our performances that we usually have in person, all virtual streaming.
Nice. And so the Taste of the Arts, is it food or is it art that people are coming to experience?
The short answer is yes. What we do with Taste of the Arts is the mission of the festival is to present the rich diversity of arts and culture within Northeast Indiana to our community, accessible without cost. So this is a free admission event. And while the primary goal for us is to just let everyone know what all Northeast Indiana has to offer arts and culture wise, there's also the culinary aspect of culinary arts. And we've got a bunch of local restaurants and local breweries that are participants with it every single year. So it's a little of both.
Are you doing anything different this year due to the pandemic? I know you said you had it last year, so you probably have a little bit of practice. Anything new?
Yes. So we're really looking forward to this year. We're proudly partnered with Three Rivers Credit Union here in Northeast Indiana to help us make this event possible this year. And in order to kind of practice our social distancing a bit, typically we usually showcase Arts Campus Fort Wayne, which is our cultural district here in Fort Wayne. We've expanded since we tend to get a little crowded, and we've actually extended the festival all the way through the Landing, which is about a block away in our historic Columbia Street, and then further out to Promenade Park, which is our riverfront park. So there's actually going to be activity at all three of these attractions throughout the day of the festival.
So it seems like it's growing.
Yes, year after year, it has continued to grow. And we've finally come to the point where we think that having this extended footprint has allowed us to continue to service the community and also service our participants in a much better way.
And what are you looking forward to most at the festival this year?
Oh, my gosh, that's an incredibly tough question. I think more than anything is just the live and in-person portion of the festival. While we will be having some online events connected to it to kind of keep that hybrid festival element and keep the safety in mind for everyone who may or may not feel comfortable coming down to the festival this year, I'm really excited to have these live in-person performances. You know, we've got 9 stages this year that are going to have over 50 different performers performing groups of music, theater, dance, poetry, and comedy. Being able to walk around the festival and things feel like normal again at a festival is really exciting to me. Just being back in person and having that live experience again, there's something to be said about having a live performance and being there in person.
Mm-hmm. And can you tell us a little bit about these performances? So you're going to have music and food and comedy, it sounds like. Is it like you come in and you go to different stations, or is it all on one stage and people just wait for the program to go through?
So we actually have 9 different stages throughout the festival, and we've got about half hour slots for every single performer. And so you're able to catch a couple of different stages. So you can move about sort of like a music festival with multiple stages that you're able to make it through. And all of the performers are headquartered in Northeast Indiana. So within some of the 11 counties of Northeast Indiana, there are a great number of Fort Wayne-based performers, but we're proud to have people from all over and representing all kinds of different performances from, you know, the more classical fine arts like ballet. We've got the Fort Wayne Ballet always performing, to some funk bands that are ready to jam out.
Nice. And when you put this festival together, how does that work out? Is this just your organization? Do you collaborate with others?
So Arts United is the primary coordinator for the festival, along with our steering committee of volunteers. And it is essentially a volunteer-run festival in that aspect to make it a driving force. However, we have so many different elements that we couldn't put it on without all of our partner organizations to make this possible. ArtLink is our contemporary gallery and local artist support in Fort Wayne, and they work with a lot of individual visual artists. They are the ones who put on the Art Market, which is a curated marketplace selling handmade goods and crafts by local artists. We also have the Fort Wayne Artists Guild put on their Kikianga Plein Air event, so there will be some live painting seen around town. And they'll have their contest and award ceremony that same day of the festival. We also have our NIPSCO Steam Park, which is a kids' activities park brought on by NIPSCO and put together activities that kids can get hands-on with from different nonprofit organizations around Northeast Indiana. So with all of those different things, we've also got other partner organizations who also generously offer free admission during their regular hours into ArtLink's galleries, the Fort Wayne Museum of Art, and the History Center.
So there's a lot going on.
Yes, there's definitely something for everyone.
You know, it's interesting because as we're talking to different arts groups, including yours, there's so much going on in different parts of Indiana that we probably don't always realize, and it's really refreshing to hear. What is your role in Arts United? How did you get into this arts sort of programming?
Sure. So I actually started out, my undergrad degree is in music technology, and I kind of found my way into this niche of arts marketing. Started initially at a nonprofit arts organization, that performing group, and I came to love just being able to promote and advocate on behalf of artists and artist organizations. And it's how I came to be in my role in Arts United now. And it's really just fabulous being able to be the person that's in the know of all the events going on.
Yeah, I'm sure you get to know before everybody else and can see some pretty cool stuff. So in terms of the stuff that you've done, have you seen a growth in the last few years in Fort Wayne in particular in the art scene?
Oh, for sure. I think the thing about Fort Wayne that's unique is that there's such a community of support here that people who are just starting out, whether it's kind of a fledgling arts organization or if it's a long-standing arts organization, people are ready to support it and want to see everyone succeed. And there's a willingness of collaboration between individual artists and organizations that I've never really seen in a lot of communities. And so seeing this kind of come to fruition with all of these different artist types and being able to have, you know, something that really is for everyone's taste, if I can use a pun there, is just really incredible to see. You know, I'm a Fort Wayne native and it has grown incredibly over the last decade, even the amount of offerings that are available here.
Well, speaking of the growth, you mentioned that the Taste of the Arts Festival started 13 years ago. What was the sort of impetus to get that started, and how was it able to last so long?
Initially, the festival was put on by the Fort Wayne Philharmonic as a fundraiser, and essentially it was kind of gifted to Arts United to kind of take over and continue to grow so that we could support not only the Philharmonic, but all of these other organizations that are here. And it's continued to expand from a couple of tents with some food and maybe a stage into, you know, 9 different stages with partner events that are coinciding with us being able to participate in multiple different ways. I believe that how many years ago we'd had about 90 plus performers on different stages. So we would have never been able to do that had we not collaborated with them in that initial startup and continue to grow our committee year over year to really get in touch with the people that are plugged into different areas of the community, which I think is something to be said about our steering committee too, is just, we don't have just, you know, the Arts United staff hanging out and deciding what we're going to do this year. We have people from all these different areas who know all these different people within the community in order to really make this a showcase of the diversity of arts and culture here.
Yeah, there's something about art that just brings people together, and it's really rewarding to see. Well, I want to thank you so much, Rachel, for taking the time to talk with us. We have about 30 seconds left. Is there anything else coming up in Fort Wayne that we should know about?
I will just give a mention to a place specifically. We've got Arts Campus Fort Wayne, which is our cultural district on that northeast corner of downtown Fort Wayne. And we co-house about 17 different organizations there between performers and presenters and homes for different nonprofits. So that'll include the museum and more.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Rachel Reinking, Director of Communications at Arts United in Fort Wayne. We'll be back after a quick break. I'm Miriam So. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We're discussing art events across the state. And with us now is Eric Winston, Executive Director and Founder of the Indianapolis Black Documentary Film Festival. Welcome to the program, Eric.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
I want to start with this film festival that I believe you began last year, but due to the pandemic, showing films in person wasn't an option. What did you do last year?
Last year, we had a virtual festival. And it turned out pretty decent. I mean, first of all, you have to understand we are very new to Indianapolis. And so most people didn't know about it and still don't know about it. So we are spending a lot of time plowing the field, so to speak, to get out and get people to know about us. But we did have a virtual festival last year, and that turned out pretty decent.
And so then what's planned for this year? Are you doing it in person?
Well, this year we have what we call a live festival. It begins on August the 13th at 6 p.m. at the Indianapolis Art Center on 60th, 67th Street. And we will have a reception. We call it opening night. We'll have a reception at 6 p.m. We'll start a very special film and screen this film at 8 p.m. And then we'll have a question and answer period with the filmmaker, and moderated by Dr. Leslie Etienne of IUPUI. The film that we are going to show is a very special film. It's called Prom Night in Mississippi. And it tells the story of the first integrated prom that took place in Charleston, Mississippi in 1988, just a few years ago. And the film was kind of, I won't say instigated, but certainly was influenced by Morgan Freeman, who is from Charleston, Mississippi, and who in 1978, told the school board in Charleston, Mississippi, that he would pay for an integrated prom. They turned it down. But being persistent as he is, he came back in 2008 is when the integrated prom took place. And 10 years before that is when he had promised that he would pay for the film, allow it to happen. They said no. And so they went in 2008, and they had the prom. And there's still some discussion of the question as to whether or not they still have separated proms. We don't know that for sure, but I wouldn't be surprised.
And, you know, it's interesting, because I think I remember reading about that, and I was just so surprised that there was still a prom that wasn't integrated, that there was still sort of segregation, I guess you could call it, happening. And so what was the importance of having this film be the one that's opening up the festival?
Well, I know the filmmaker, and I had, when I worked in Chicago at Columbia College Chicago, I had had this film, and I've always been taken aback by this film, because it is such a powerful film with the young people who are in it, that I said to my colleagues that are helping me with the festival, I said, look, I think we should open with this film, because it's so powerful, and the theme of it is so timely in this particular day and time. And I think that it has an appeal to young people, old people, young people, middle-aged people, everybody would have an interest in this film because of the nature of it. So we said we would go ahead and try and have it this year. And hopefully it'll turn out to be what people will enjoy and get a lot from.
You mentioned earlier that this is was brought to Indianapolis. You're new to Indianapolis with this film festival and putting it on. So were you based somewhere else before, or is this just something new that you wanted to bring to Indiana?
Yeah, I live in Ohio, and I right up the road in Dayton, Ohio, near Dayton, Ohio. But when I decided that I wanted to try and put together a film festival, and I decided that I wanted to be an African American documentary film festival, not just a film festival. I wanted to specialize in documentaries because, as I traveled around to film festivals with my films and just attending different film festivals, I noticed that there was not a dedicated African, and there is not, as far as I know, a dedicated film festival for African-American films. So I said, I'd like to try and specialize in this. I then thought about, well, where would I do it? And I knew that Indianapolis had a very large African-American population, probably the largest one in this area. And I said, well, let's go ahead and try it here. So I contacted a few friends in Indianapolis and said, hey, what do you think about doing this? And they said, yeah, try it and see what happens. And so far, we've not being new to this, not being known in the city, so to speak, I've had to kind of go around meeting people, and I've been doing that. And it's been working out pretty good. Everyone that I've spoken to has been very nice, very, very helpful in helping get me to meet people. The Indianapolis Recorder newspaper, the African-American newspaper, they took to us right away and have been very, very supportive in terms of helping to both financially support us as well as they're doing a big spread on us to kind of get into the African-American community specifically.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that, especially when it comes to documentary film, there isn't anything like this. Why is it important to focus on documentary films versus feature films?
Well, I think that documentary films, that first of all, you know, I have this notion that most African Americans aren't aware of all of the diverse films that are in the African American diaspora, for as documentaries are concerned, that tell stories that I think we need to know about. If you look at the array of films that we have in this, we have 31 films in this festival that we're going to show on Saturday, the 14th, all free of charge at the Central Indianapolis Public Library on St. Clair Street, starting at 10 a.m. on Saturday and concluding around 10:30 or 11 o'clock on Saturday night. You look at the array of films that we have, they all tell stories that African Americans need to know. And that's very important to me, to make it possible for African Americans to learn about their history through these documentaries, because documentaries do tell historical stories that, and things like that. Now, I think it's important for your listeners to know that these films are by and about African-Americans, which means that anybody can make a film about African-Americans, regardless of their race, color, or creed. And if we deem it to be important enough, we'll put it in our festival. It's not necessary to be African-American to put a film in this festival, because we believe that that the subject matters can be told by anyone, as long as it's true, as long as it's meets the criteria that we set up with regard to accepting films in the festival.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. I was actually going to ask you, if the filmmakers, if it was all African-American filmmakers. And it's fascinating to know that you're open to having other folks submit, because I'm just thinking for myself, I would just want to have it just from one side, to feel to see and be seen and to feel represented. Is there anybody that feels like, you shouldn't have non-African-American filmmakers submitting to this?
No one has ever said that to me, and I don't think that I've ever gotten that impression. Now there are African American film festivals that want only African Americans to submit the films, and so these are film festivals that take both long form, short forms, documentaries, and motion pictures. But my festival, or this festival, is documentaries, and it is documentaries from anyone who can tell a credible story related to the African-American experience. In fact, Paul Saltzman, the director of Prom Night in Mississippi, is not African-American. He's Canadian. And of course, he can be both Canadian and not African-American too, but he's a wonderful filmmaker and has made a number of films in the African American experience that are very, very good films. And so we have a number of these films that are by non-African Americans that are good films that were accepted into the festival. But we have films, majority of the films are by African Americans. And the subject matter that we have in this festival is different. I've got one film that I'm very, very happy about because it's something kind of where that I experienced, not in terms of the subject matter of the film, but it's about a Vietnam experience, and it's called Umoja, and it tells the story of a young Vietnamese African American young man who set out to find his father, who was African American. His father served in Vietnam, and he was able to track down his father. And the film tells the story about how he connected with his father and came to Grand Rapids, Michigan, and met his they had his entire family with him. And when he showed up, I looked at him and looked at his father, and I said, "Yep, that's his son." and all of his cousins and his nieces and nephews and all of his family were there to greet him, and they had a lot of genuine love for him. And I thought that was good. And I said, "People need to see this, because they would never know that this existed." One of the other films that we have, called Bass Reeves, the average person would not even think about this or wouldn't have any idea about this. Bass Reeves was a African-American deputy United States Marshal who rode the planes in the 1880s until 1907, when Missouri became state. And he arrested, and they said that he was very, very feared among the Wild West, you know. And that story, and it is, I tell you, it is an excellent film, and it's only 7 minutes long. But the filmmaker did a great job of putting it together, and it has all of the elements in it of what I consider to be a good documentary. And then we have, to bring it closer to home, we have a film called In Closing. And for the Indianapolis residents, this will be something close to home. It tells the story of the closing of Broad Ripple High School that I guess was very contentious when they closed it here in Indianapolis. So, and that film, believe it or not, well, I guess you would realize it'd be true. It has the highest request for tickets right now in the festival, because I'm sure a lot of people want to see that. And so we're looking forward to having them do that. I would be remiss if I didn't tell people, well, how do you attend? The festival, as I said, begins on Friday night, the 13th, with a reception at 6 o'clock. We have a $25 charge to attend Friday night. And as I said, we'll have an open bar, and a cash bar. And that'll go for about an hour and a half, and then we'll have the film, and then we'll have Q&A right after that. We'll be out of there about 10 o'clock at the latest. Saturday we start at 10 a.m. Now, the tickets for Saturday are all free, but you have to sign up so that we have an idea of how many people will be attending each session. And you get your tickets both for Friday and Saturday by going to our website, www.ibdff.com. That's www.ibdff.com. And you will see how you click on the various tabs to get tickets for Friday and Saturday. I should note that the Friday night event is free to students. Even though it's a cost event, it's free to students. And so all students have to do is say they're a student and they get a ticket.
Well, all of these films sound amazing, and being able to get to the festival. We have about 30 seconds left. I just wanted to ask real quick, For listeners who are listening, anyone can attend the film festival. They don't have to be a film expert.
No, absolutely not. In fact, we want non-film experts. We want film experts. We want everybody have an interest in film. You got to have an interest in film because, you know, as I travel around the documentaries around the country, there are people that will go to a film festival and they will start out in the morning and they will see 6, 7, 8 films if they can see them. And we have films, like I said, from 6 minutes to an hour and 20 minutes. So we've got them at different lengths.
Amazing. It sounds like it's going to be a great time. And I appreciate you coming on and telling us all about it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Eric Winston is the executive director and founder of the Indianapolis Black Documentary Film Festival. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. I'm Miriam Soeb. Thanks for listening. This is All In.